Yo Mama's so big. Wait a minute, we're live.
In case you want to know why Veronica's face looks like that, it's because I said, Yo Mama's so big that Gimli counts her as two.
And I'm just wondering when we discovered the Venn diagram crossover of Lord of the Rings elf taunts and Yo Mama jokes. And I'm wondering.
Apparently, right now.
I did not know that such a Venn diagram existed, but here we are.
Or real, maybe that's like, you know what? I got it. That comes in like the epilogue, yeah, the very, very lost director's cut where they actually have Tom Bombadil and he's throwing those out.
Oh, that's it. Tom Bombadil mama jokes. Yo mama.
I would burn that celluloid. Or do they even make celluloid? I would burn that data drive.
Tom, you could have Gandalf doing it.
He's too
Gandalf
old.
Gandalf could be doing your mama jokes.
He'd break a hip, man. Ian McKellen's freaking ancient at this point. Garak, I love him.
Ian McKellen's a treasure.
He is indeed. Okay, so those of you who got your bingo cards from last week, I think you got the first square. If you don't know what we're talking about, you need to go back to last episode.
Yep.
But that would require you to know that. Howdy, folks, and welcome to another episode of the Dead Robot Society. I am Paul E. Cooley. Joining me today, my wonderful co-hosts, Veronica Jaguar and Terry Mixon. How the hell are you?
Doing. I'm not surrounded by as many cats, nor am I being suffocated with cat fur like Terry is at the moment.
I don't think
Julius has decided he is ready for love.
The love show.
Have you heard of a restraining order? Okay. Veronica, why don't you go ahead with how you're doing while Terry takes a cat nap?
I'm watching Julius try to get comfortable. He's like, you're gonna throw me, you're gonna leave me. Throw me or leave me.
This shocks you?
It shouldn't. I've been around here for almost a year. It shouldn't shock me at all. Let's see. I, like my little nickname says, Quick Pitch, I did my Audiobook Publisher Association speed dating event yesterday. Wow. Yesterday was a long day, forgive me. Which I pretty much had 4 minutes to introduce myself and not look like a fool. So hopefully it worked. It turns out there were like 25 different producers and casting directors on the call, and I got the names of them. I have not opened that email and looked at that list yet because I will do it on Sunday or Monday. And then I'll start contacting people. And it's like, hey, I hope I didn't make it too bad of a showing on Friday. You want to hire me?
Give me money. Give me money.
So, yeah. And I posted new demos. I finally got some coaching on those in my non-fic demo. My director coaching buddy, she was very happy with it. So hopefully that'll land me a couple new books. My military sci-fi sample is a... it actually comes from your second Imperial Marines book, Terry. So it was good, fast-paced, urgency. So yeah, other than that, it's been working on the next couple books. I landed a new series that I'll get to start working on. And it hasn't been announced, so I can't say what it is or the genre, but trust me, it's on brand and it's fun.
Excellent.
And there are cats involved. So there are actively involved cats in that story. And Chris asked, do you charge a percentage or fixed rate for doing Audible? That depends on the contract. So Audible through, well, if you go through Audible and ACX, you can either do royalty share, where you do split a percentage of the royalties, or you can do a per finished hour deal, and then you retain all rights and you pay your narrator up front. And I do both. So, fun times.
Throw money at V right now.
Do you have a book that needs a narrator? Call V right now. 1-800-RED-DRESS.
Too many letters, but I'll work on it. Sorry, nerd. I'm like, wait a second. Yeah.
I saw you doing the math in your head trying to figure it out. I was like, oh, damn.
I'm the sort of person that looks at license plates and figures out, is that, did they pay for that extra? Or is that just like a clever, like, you know, setup of, you know, letters and numbers?
Well, you know, so. The 1-800 numbers, you can have 1-877.
Mm-hmm.
And the R is 7, so you could say 1-877 or 87 red dress.
If I need a new, if I need to ever do a Google Voice number, I can try to do that. But somehow I don't think I would do that, and I wouldn't want to. I'm very much of that, you know, text me rather than call me. I don't need the voice thing. So,
huh?
But that's me. Yeah, I hate the phone.
I hate the phone too. If you send me an email, I might respond. If you call me, I'll get around to it, maybe.
That sounds like why he never answers my phone calls.
That's a completely different reason. That's called the block button. That's something completely different. Speaking of Mr. Blocked, how the hell are you, Mr. Mixon? And why are you a Geek Warrior?
Because I went to a couple of town meetings to fight the city on behalf of cats.
Oh, okay.
Our local shelter, which is a no-kill shelter, had been doing things that I don't approve of. Taking friendly cats that are adoptable and putting them out with the TNR, just dumping them back out on the street.
Oh.
And so battle has begun. They claim that they are now reassessing everything. And considering how packed the meeting was with people that were displeased, I sure hope that that's true. But we shall see.
Yeah, that can't, you're right. That seems really backwards. And yeah, that sounds awful.
It is. And so my wife and I went and spoke not only at the shelter meeting, but at the town hall meeting to make our voices heard.
Mm. Well, good for you.
Mm-hmm. And I'll continue going every 2 weeks. They're going to have another meeting about this, and I'm going to be there. They shall not get away with anything, fella. I'm watching.
This should be interesting. Well, what are you doing on the writing front?
Not a goddamn thing.
I am very disappointed in you. Very disappointed in you.
I've been having problems with the new treadmill that I bought and trying to wait for them to call me, and it's just been that and doing other things around the house, taking the wife to appointments has just wrecked another week of my life. So starting tomorrow, I get to focus on that, and I'm just going to focus on that. And the other problems can solve themselves because I've got to get back to writing.
Gotcha.
Well, I'm sorry.
People bitch me. I've got one patron on Patreon that if I don't post the Saturday episode, I get a message from him. Where's my episode?
No comment.
Paul, stop harassing Terry. It's not the kind of encouragement he needs. Be nice.
Oh, I would never harass Terry. I would not about
on his
writing.
Patreon.
No, I would never do that to him on his Patreon. If I were going to join his Patreon, I would have other obnoxious things to do. Very obnoxious things.
I dare you. I double dog dare you.
Uh-huh. I'll bet. Ooh. I have been working my...
I'd even refund you the money for your Patreon so you could be on there and just stir the shit.
I have been working on Extinction, and I'm writing the most terrible part that I've been fearing writing for the entire time that I thought about this book. So I'm finally writing all the scenes of the quote-unquote prologue that goes on for freaking ever.
Oh, good. You're not having the Black go into some house of ill repute and then make it all sound like bacon.
You come up with the most interesting ideas, V. I really need to hire you at some point as a plot consultant. You know what would be really cool? If it ain't Mickey Mouse. Where are we getting Mickey Mouse from? It's there at the football game. Just go with it, man.
Well, you know, ESPN Wide World of Sports and Disney, same property. And there are underground tunnels. So, yeah, you could. But I would not be able to ensure the validity of said ideas or the salability of the finished book. So.
Well, I spent yesterday I Googled, or yesterday or Thursday, I Googled silverfish earwigs, crows, NMRs, sizes, nuclear magnetic resonance.
Oh, that's right.
And a few other odds and ends, including the Astrodome. Terry would be very happy with me, very proud of me for doing that. And I figured out, mapped out everything, and then today I had to integrate all this fucking research in, so now I'm in the sewers again, which is my favorite place. Spending a lot of time at sewers lately. Not personally, but, you know, as a disembodied head. So
just remember, if you get down far enough to see the river of pink slime, come back up and don't look at the painting in the museum.
I'm not writing that book. So anyway, I am at 102,000 words, and I still have Hush. It's worse than you know. I still have the rest of this to write, which is probably another 5 to 7. And then I have to talk to Terry about the other subplot about whether or not I need to eject it. And I think if I don't eject it, that's going to be another 5 to 10. I'll probably bring V in on that brainstorming conversation.
Oh, dear.
And then I still have to write the end of the book. So we got another 40 grand to go, maybe 50. We'll see. But I want to try and finish that this freaking month. Is the sewer the
14 days left?
Is the sewer an analog for this show you do with Terry? What are you trying to say about the show, man? You're insulting V like that.
Why am I not involved?
You? How dare you? Matt says, okay, joining the show at the point where Paul says, I've been spending a lot of time in the sewers. It's my favorite place. That's the welcome we've come to expect. Yeah, thanks. Anyway, that notwithstanding, I have got all the plans done. I got all the plot bullshit I need to do. I figured out and solved all the problems that were kicking my ass. Don't believe how tough it is to actually try and be accurate with the city. And I chose the wrong place to put something and then had to fight to get it the hell away from what it was close to. So I figured out how to do that, though. We'll see if it works under there. Now, before we continue, I'm a horror writer. And I have a horror story to tell you.
Did you say you're a horrible writer?
That too.
Okay.
I went to make coffee yesterday morning. When was it? 3:30, 4 in the morning, somewhere in there. And I didn't want to wake up my wife, so I usually make coffee in the dark pretty much anyway. So this time I had to actually grind the beans, so I turn on the little light over the sink. So I got the grounds ready and everything else. I put them in the French press. Everything's good and groovy. And I go to put water in the carafe. And I put water in the carafe, and it boils. And I do my coffee and everything else, and I drink my coffee. I walk the dog. I come back. And I'm thinking about having another carafe of coffee. So I go and open up the kettle, and there's a dead cockroach in it.
Oh, ew.
So I may have been drinking boiled cockroach coffee for who knows how long.
Ew.
And it was a big-ass Texas-sized tree roach. Ew. It was not one of them small ones.
Well, you know, the Special Forces people, they eat cockroaches just for fun.
Good for them.
You're going to survive.
I have survived. I blasted the carafe, as you might imagine, with a lot of soap and boiled it several thousand times. And now I'm drinking coffee again. So
every time you look into the carafe, you'll find another leg.
I fucking hate you so much right now. Fucking hate you so much right now.
You know what? I suddenly do not feel any shame for my little multi-purpose ninja coffee thing that I can either make a cup or a pot or whatever.
So instead of corpse coffee, we need cool cockroach coffee.
No. Get some crunch in your coffee.
Oh my god.
Oh my gosh.
But I had to relate that story. I had to relate that story. Unfortunately, V is not listening to this story on a bus somewhere with a drink between her lips so that we can get the comment about the spit take. But, you know, here we are. So I'm glad I was able to share that with you. This was my shared therapy, getting out there in the open, because I had dreams about Kafka last night. It didn't go well. That's not the way I wanted to drink coffee with Kafka.
So good thing that you're in Texas and not in Florida, because if we've got those sizes of cockroach that somehow get into the house, you know what's not far behind? Wolf spiders, because wolf spiders eat cockroaches.
No, Gators. You know what's not
Gators
far behind?
Is coming.
The shadow cat is not far behind.
Oh, that's good. that your cat is aggressive enough to do that. Mine, the only thing they'll go after is lizards, and those cause tapeworms, so I have to go and scoop lizards. And roaches. God, I hate roaches. Oh.
Were roaches involved in my Kafka dreams? Yes. Yeah, the very metamorphosis. Matt says there's good eating on insects. I tried locusts. Not bad. Tastes like a cross between prawn and chicken.
No, sorry. My hunting gathering exists in the grocery store between the, you know, the produce department and the meat department. I will own my suburbanness right there. Thank you very much. In the apocalypse, I'll probably go vegetarian because, sorry.
My wife brought home. Pescatarian. My wife said, she came home from work and she didn't announce anything. She's like, I brought a snack. And I'm like, oh God, now what? So she brought home two pumpkin spiced iced lattes and two pumpkin spiced muffins. And she was like, if I'm going to do this, you're going to be an accessory to the crime. It's pretty funny. Snuppy says the dead really were in your cup. Yes, they were. Yes, they were. Ugh, boiled cockroach. Gotta love it. Anyway, we're not here to talk about cockroaches. We are here to talk about some crazy, stupid shit Terry said on Discord.
Again?
That's a pretty wide range of things we could be talking about.
I mean, that's like, you know, saying Terry was playing with a cat. It's like, well, okay, can you be more specific? And then you can't go, a striped one. No, can you be more specific? A black one. No, can you be more specific? A fluffy one? Still not helping.
Terry asked, external influences. Do you read stories in your genre while writing? And I'll get to the other questions in a moment.
I would submit to you that the answer would have to be yes. It certainly is for me, because if I didn't want to read stuff in my own genre while I was writing, I would never read anything at all in my own genre.
Yeah, okay, I can see that. V, what do you think?
Sort of. I mean, I am more likely to listen to or watch a series in the genre that I'm writing, but I won't necessarily like read on my Kindle or Deadtree.
Okay, but still, you're basically consuming media.
Yeah,
in the same genre.
I'll consume it, but I will tend to consume it in a fashion where I'm focused less on the. I can focus more on the story and the characters and the setting as like a more visual or auditory plaything than like when I pick up a book and read, I tend to go into study mode. Mm-hmm. So I tend to do more analysis, and it's unless it's a genre where I know it's for fun, then I brain kicks into work. And so I'm better off just listening. Or watching.
Fair enough.
But yeah.
That makes sense. I invariably consume media that is in whatever genres that I'm working on. Usually there's something that if I'm really going after a movie in a horror genre that I'm kind of writing, it's because I'm stuck and I need to see something. me parroting or mimicking necessarily what I see. It's because it kicks something into gear in my head about whatever problem it is I'm having. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. And sometimes I need to read just to basically help me get into description mode or something along those lines, you know, see how other folks do it and how not to do it. And, you know, sometimes remind myself of how this game works and that everybody does it differently. That's always a good thing. But the media, we're talking music, we're talking video game playthroughs, we're talking movies, we're talking TV shows, we're talking everything. This has to do with horror, science fiction, and even some goddamn fucking urban fantasy. So it all kind of works together for the kind of stories that I write. Oh, Antoine says Lamash 2 is still my favorite. Yeah, and I wrote that after watching The Mummy, the original Mummy, the Karloff Mummy, the good Mummy. Anyway, and the other thing is, oh, wait. Antoine says, when I used to write fiction and I was in the mood to write horror, I would listen to Lovecraft, Victor Laval, and yes, even Paul for inspiration. You sicko. What were you thinking? Well, the other question... Huh?
There's something about... I forget where I read it. It was in one of the books on craft. But if you're struggling to figure out what you're doing in a scene or you're trying to describe something, one of the suggestions is, you know, go find a book that you enjoy in your genre and find, you know, find a couple paragraphs and literally write them, you know, handwriting or typing, but write them word for word so that you kind of, I'm not sure how typing would work, but handwriting so that you follow, you know, you follow the track and the flow of words and how the idea gets laid out and set up on the page.
That's how I used to do with Ray Carver back when I was in college. I would take one of his short stories, my favorite short story, his Cathedral, and I would type it. And I got into the cadence of how the sentences fit together. I got into the cadence of how the description worked and everything else. And then I basically started writing another story, kind of using that cadence. And that kind of helped me find my voice. So it ended up being very, very important in that manner of discovery. But it sounds like a stupid example, but it does work. If you go through and do a few paragraphs, especially from your favorite book, and let me advise that favorite book be somewhat modern. Not fucking Tolkien. and be able to basically, you know, get a sense of how those words are kind of put together and how the sentences are constructed and just pay attention to them. Especially if you're at the beginning of the craft or even intermediate and you're still trying to find your voice, I think it's a worthwhile exercise to do.
And so, if you're like switching genres. If you're traditionally writing in one genre, like, I want to give this a try, then consider picking up or listening to something in that other genre and trying to, you know, fan fiction is not a bad word. There is
fantasy.
I said fan fiction.
I was thinking urban fantasy.
Yeah, fan fiction would not be a bad way to go.
No, because then you can, you know, you can use the guy. It's, you know, you're like, rather than drawing your own picture, it's the coloring book and you're just picking different colors to, you know, put in there.
Ah, well, that brings up the second question Mr. Mixon had, which is, do they contaminate or influence your story?
I use those words in quotes because I've heard some people saying that they feel like their work is being contaminated by and or influenced by. So I don't necessarily agree with that, but I wanted to throw that out there anyway. Personally, I think that music, much more than fiction, influences my work.
Really?
I could give you a concrete example. One of the stories that I wrote with Kelsey in it, where she was hunting down a bunch of assassins on the mountaintop, I was listening to the soundtrack for one of the Transformers movies, one where it was very sad music, and it just got into my head and I could not get it out, and it influenced the events of the story because it made me push her more into a mindset that was not necessarily my own.
I could see that. I can totally see that. If I want to get into rage mode for what I'm writing, I will go metal. If I need to go kill some people, okay, in fiction, if I need to go raise some hell in the fiction, especially if the monster, they're facing off with a monster, the monster's hunting them or any of that kind of garbage, things are blowing up, I want that metal. I want metal and industrial in the background because it gives me the pacing I want. V is shaking her head vigorously.
I can't write with music. I really can't.
I can't anymore, but sometimes I do, yeah.
But I'll... Different, like, I had soundtracks for stuff that I was writing. And so different characters, and this was more so for the collaborative stuff, but being able to have music for each character and kind of having the feel of how their individual arcs are supposed to progress. That was helpful. But I get distracted by music. Like if I need some, I more need something to fill the quiet so that I can focus. So I'll put on one of those YouTube channels that's got like background music with no words and nothing I can predict.
Yeah, you're looking for instruments. Soundtracks
is what I listen to when I listen to things like that.
And I've tried soundtracks.
This was Transformers The Last Night was the one that I listened to with the doing the Kelsey. And another example of that is I've been listening very heavily to the latest Mission Impossible soundtrack. And every time I hear it, it influences what I'm going to write in the next series that I'm going to start. Every time I hear it, my brain goes straight to that and go, ooh, what can I do now? And so it's like somehow tied itself in with that, and I'm not sure why.
Interesting.
It's changed it from being a military protagonist to being an ex-duelist. And a spy and all of that kind of nonsense. So it's definitely influenced and contaminated my work.
And is that a bad thing?
I don't believe that it is, because it's inspiring me to do something outside my comfort zone. And I think that's very important for a creator.
No, you're just supposed to stay in your box, do the same shit over and over again, man.
Some people do. And then you read their stories and you go, haven't I heard this before?
Hence why I'm ending the Black series.
Yeah,
I can understand that. I've always had a very, very strong relationship with music, and I was a musician for a while, and I can't get away from it. I can't write with silence because of my tinnitus. It just is shrieking in my ear constantly. So I need music to basically shut that the fuck up so I can focus and not worry, you know, about getting a screwdriver and trying to plant it through my head. So the music means a lot to me, and it's just very, very rarely that I write in silence. Red Any Social says, I have to have silence when writing revising. I put in noise-canceling headphones. I listen to music a lot while outlining or brainstorming. Yeah.
For me, I can write when I'm listening to music, but it slows me down. I've noticed that I produce much quicker when I'm not listening to music, but I can listen to it when I'm editing, when I'm doing the revision pass, I can.
Yeah. That's when I really go hard for the instrumentals.
Yeah. I think part of it is I've gotten to the point where I have a set time where I'm able to write, and it's the, you sit down, no matter what, just no matter how terrible it is, you got to put words on the page and let's keep going until, you know,
I need an air conditioned shed in the woods that I can go to create.
With a working treadmill.
He never has to put on clothes. He just basically sit in there and freeze his ass off while he's sweating to the oldies and writing.
I did just say an AC. So I'm not going to be sweating my ass off. But, you know, I really did think about this. If I had, you know, won the lottery and was going to go ahead and build my own place, I would set up a little place that I was going to do writing that's like half a mile away that I walk down a path to get to. So it's not easy to leave once you get there. Mm-hmm. It's got no connectivity to the outdoors. That would be what I would do.
Yeah. My favorite place. Because if I'm going to get writing done for myself, the best thing I can do is leave the house, because then I'm not distracted by the 17 million other things that I could possibly do. And my favorite place to go is there's a coffee shop downtown, and the Wi-Fi is spotty. So I can't do anything else. And there's always, they have decent music, but, and I can't predict it. And as long as the conversation around me isn't ludicrous, because my eavesdropping will pick up. My superpower is eavesdropping. I own that. But it's really, really distracting when there are idiots around me.
There would be no cats in my writing spot if that was the case.
Oh,
distraction.
But it's cute.
Why is Terry sitting naked in a shed the first place Paul goes? I've seen pictures.
If you have to ask why Paul continuously and uninterruptedly thinks about my naked body, then you don't know Paul.
It's burned into my fucking brain. It was horrific. I've been going to therapy for the last couple of years. It's getting a little bit better. I can now look at him without imagining him with his clothes off. It's not as bad as it used to be. I'd only go blind twice a week. So we're making progress.
Have you stopped touching yourself?
I will never stop touching myself. But you have nothing to do with that. Hey, I'm male and my dick works. What?
You know, this needs to be in the bingo card where we get V to where she's like either covering her mouth because she wants to say something or covering her face going, I can't believe I'm hearing this.
I just
did Paul go a bridge too far? Of course he did.
I cannot, all I can do is
totally derailed. You have totally derailed her.
God, you mentioned the penis and it all goes off the rails.
It's the extraneous noise that it may or may not contaminate my writing. So,
depends on what you're writing. If you're writing a snappy robot, some of this shit is actually working.
Not with the romance I'm writing, but potentially.
A male in my dick works. What? V was pretty distracted by the idiots around her. Yeah, she's always distracted by the idiots around her. Every Saturday, between 3 and 5.
And for those keeping track on bingo, we've hit 10 people.
Oh, yeah, we have. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Howdy, Dean. Oh, boy. I knew this was coming. We knew this was coming. Xander asks, have you all seen the news in the last few days about Bill Willingham releasing the rights of Fable into the public domain?
Yes.
I just saw the story, so I can't really comment that much on it.
I could give you a brief rundown. Bill Willingham believes that DC has been screwing with and screwing him over for quite some time, and he made the decision on the 15th to go ahead and yesterday to release Fables into the public domain. Today, DC put out a corporate press release saying, no, we have the copyright to it, and if you do, we're going to sue you, sue you, sue you, sue you, sue you.
Now, here's what's interesting. There's not enough information, but Bill made it sound like that they did not sign or agree on the last contract. Therefore, I don't know what that stipulates. So this is going to be another one of these messy legal things that is no doubt going to go on for quite a while. But it was rather fascinating to basically tell DC straight up, go fuck yourself. you're not trustworthy. You cannot be trusted. You don't act in the best interests of the company or the product. Fuck you. So gotta love that.
The person that wrote whatever the novel was that Fables was based upon is contemplating releasing that novel into the public domain to go ahead and make things even more exciting.
I don't think Fable's the RPG game, but I could be wrong. I don't know anything about Fable.
It's a comic strip. It's not a comic strip. It's a comic series.
It's a graphic novel, set of graphic novels. tables. Okay.
Now, when I look in the, I looked in this book to see, and it lists both Bill Willingham and DC as the copyright holders. So this is going to be an ugly, ugly, ugly scene.
Yelp.
Yelp.
Fables and the Wolf Among Us. Oh, is that where Wolf Among Us came from?
I don't know.
Oh, which is a game, yes. This is an ugly situation because if Bill wins, it will set up a lot of dominoes to fall. And because we don't have any information on the contracts or any context, we have no idea what any of this means, if anything. It could just be all bullshit. So, you know, this is me grabbing my popcorn, making sure it's salted and buttered to my taste, throw a little jalapeno juice in that shit and see what's going to happen. You know, slurp down my Diet Coke and watch the legal briefs fly, because it's gonna happen. He's encouraging fan fiction to, at this point, just basically straight up grab and sell it.
Actually, Fables fan fiction has been allowed. It's already allowed.
But now it's going to be sold, potentially.
It's very convoluted.
Exactly.
Copyright law is murky at the very best of times. And when you've got interpretations of the contracts and the fact that he claims that DC has been violating the contract for years over many things, and it's only gotten worse, and that's the reason he's decided to do this, that all may come out in trial when this gets to court, because it'll end up going to court. It's going to cost a ludicrous sum of money, and we'll hope that, you know, somebody with some deep pockets goes ahead and represents him against the corporation. But whenever it comes around, who knows how it's going to turn out? Because we don't know the contracts. We don't know what's going to be applicable. And Warner Brothers has deep pockets.
Yes, they do. So I'm hoping that somebody like the FSF gets involved and basically starts going, yes, now it's time to go after the media companies. The blood is in the water. Let's do this shit. You know, for better or worse. And again, it depends on what the contracts say. It depends on a whole bunch of shit, but...
Right.
It'll be fun to watch.
I mean, I'm just looking at what I'm finding through Wikipedia. And the created and written by is just Bill Willingham. The publisher is DC via Vertigo and their Black Label.
Right. Technically, Terry Severed Press is also on the copyright of the Black Books and the Derelict Books and Station 3.
Because did they register it in their name?
I don't know how that works with them. What it means is they're basically copywriting all the shit that they did that isn't mine. The layout and all the other crap that's in the book. It doesn't affect
but
my copyright.
Content.
Right.
Yeah, that's true. In his original post, Willingham said that DC left the copyright to him, so he believes he has the right to do this.
Hmm. Right. So when the contract, so if he didn't re-up the contract or whatever it was, he refused to sign, then they're kind of SOL.
Well, they could say the stuff that's already under contract. You know, it's like the Winnie the Pooh. Better not put a red shirt on that thing.
Right. So there may be some limits to this, but it is a big deal. If it works out the way I would like it to work out, then that would mean that it makes it much more difficult for the media companies to completely fuck us. And that would be kind of nice. That would be kind of nice. So, yeah, thank you for bringing that up.
Huh. So, I'm just thinking this is... So, they went and created new characters based upon public domain characters from various fairy tales, correct?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. So, it's just... So, it's that interpretation.
They've
so it's
taken
their interpretation of Snow White versus like Disney's
interpretation. No, not precisely. They've taken the various fables and put them in modern day New York City, living in the real world. And
it's the seed of the idea is whatever original fairy tale is public domain. And then the new piece is what is being disputed.
I don't know that that's actually the case. I believe DC is making the disputation that nobody better touch any fable or we're going to sue you. is, I believe, what their statement boils down to. Okay. So maybe that'll become clarified soon. If you want to look at how things like that could be shaded as what's public domain and what's not public domain, before Sherlock Holmes was completely in the public domain in the United States, some 10 short stories were still under contract. So you could write a Sherlock Holmes story, but you could not talk about...
couldn't make reference to those stories.
You couldn't make reference to Dr. Watson's wife.
Right.
Right. Do you remember that? Okay.
So it's that kind of thing. Now, how this is going to work out, I have no idea. I don't know how it would give it. If somebody's going to be doing artwork, you would have to stay very far away from the visual representations that are already in this series.
Right. So if I was going to have... Well, so if I'm going to do a redo of... Which is a very prevalent in paranormal romance, they always redo fairy tales. Okay. So if they're going to redo a fairy tale and they're going to have a big bad wolf, it better not have any resemblance to the name Bigby and how that person is represented in fables, because then that's infringement.
Make it the big bad shark.
That then you've got.
I'm sorry.
Really
I just had to say
dumb
that.
Thing that's
you know,
stuck in our-
as a bad guy, Mr. Shark would have a real grill.
Yes, he would. Yes, he would. You're a bad man, Terry Mixon. Urban fantasy does it too. The Dresden mm-hmm. books go deep into fairy tales. Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I'm not writing Jelly Gator NATO. That is not happening.
Oh, after you promised. You swore Jelly Gator NATO was going to happen.
No, I did not. You swore. You swore that I swore that I would make it happen. I'm not making that shit happen.
That just sounds like a really bad sandwich at this point.
Well, it sounds a little bit less ridiculous. Well, okay, it sounds less offensive than Black NATO, which just gives off the wrong vibe completely. So I thought about writing that as a joke for my patrons, but never did it. Because I couldn't make the story make any goddamn sense in my head. But how would that be any different from Sharknado? So, you know.
True.
How do these people do this? How do they get away with making that shit?
Because they have stupid amounts of money to throw at an idea, and yet they still won't pay their actors and writers.
Oh, you know, we haven't gotten an update on the strikes. You know, it's been months. What's going on?
Oh, and they're looking for a strike authorization for video game voice actors now.
I thought they already had strike authorization for that.
The vote is due, I think, in 10 days. That's what my postcard said. Mm. But yeah, voice actors in video games, I didn't realize. Oh.
Red Annie Social says the science of Sharknado is right on par with the science of Discovery Shark Week.
Point. Good to know that my cat isn't the only one that does that. But
yeah, exactly.
Poor boy.
Got a cough. So why am I making this noise? Why do I sound like a broken bicycle horn? Why, Dad?
So have the audiobook narrators struck yet?
So the funny thing is, I learned this. Audiobook narrators, it's very, very different than all of the other, like, you know, commercial TV and movies, video games, because the contracts, the pattern follows traditional publishing more so than any other media. So the individual contracts are negotiated with each publisher through the union. So in order for that to happen, in order for a strike to happen, you'd have to decide to strike against 65 or 70 different entities.
Yeah.
And those 65 to 70 different entities all treat audiobook narrators very, very differently. So it's not as easy. And I mean, one of the big things that's coming that's happened because of the strikes is that screen actors are gravitating toward audiobook as a way to, you know, fill in the time.
Yeah, you talked about that before.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm seeing it happen. I have friends who work, you know, in the bigger cities, and they're like, yep, I have to, you know, so-and-so is on my docket for today, and it's great, but I'd like to see the other narrators who, you know, have been doing this for years and years and years actually do this rather than just some big name because they're on strike. And it's one thing if you are like,
go start a podcast, stop fucking up our businesses.
Well, no, I mean, it's one thing if you're like what the term would be, a working actor.
Mm-hmm.
So someone who you know, is working and hustling for those guest spots and, you know, your background acting things. I am not going to fault anybody the opportunity to pull a paycheck and, you know, get stuff. But I am not surprised in the least.
Xander says Dungeon Crawler Carl has a guest narrator of Patrick Warburton. When I made that quip about podcasts, I was thinking about all the late night show hosts that got together because they were bored.
Yeah. Who was it that I just saw something. Oh, God. One of the talk show hosts on HBO.
Bill Maher.
Bill Maher, that's it. Has decided to bring his show back without the writer's portion
of the show. Yeah, Drew Barrymore decided to do the same thing and use because she, I think the deal was she decided she didn't go to one awards show, but it was okay for her to resume her show without writers and to have other like fillers come in. And I'm like, it's not how you do it.
Yeah, nobody's happy about that.
No.
She's getting spanked pretty hard in the press.
Oh, trust me, I'm seeing it. I'm seeing it happen in a lot of, you know, online narrator groups. So it's, I mean, yeah, it's inconvenient, but I would prefer to see, you know, if you've got a voice, tell people to pay others what they're worth. And, you know, to make sure that, you know, all of these actors, because it's not your big, you know, it's not your huge name actors. It's the folks who are getting, you know, $400, $500 a gig for, you know, background stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, having to hold down a couple other jobs. And they're the ones who can't, you know, qualify for their health insurance.
So what are the consequences for people that do this kind of thing? Are there negative consequences for them?
If they go and cross the strike lines?
Like, say, Bill Maher, for example.
Well, he's not technically crossing a line, is he?
He's creating his own show. He's going to be, you know, he's going to be tweaking things. He's doing the writer gig on his own stuff.
If he wants to write on his own show, I don't think they can do anything about that.
I believe they can.
I think that, I mean, I don't know if that means he gets blacklisted by certain groups. I don't know if that means in the future other people will not work for him. And it will depend upon how long people remember. Now, JR, you're saying that sticking with the union requires the union to stick with you. The modern world, those unions are often not there for the workers. I will say that with SAG-AFTRA, they are there. They're constantly negotiating. I've been able to, like, if I have a question about stuff when it comes to what I'm allowed to do, what I can't do, how to do certain things, I can send an email to the top person who deals with audiobooks, and she will email me back. And they know, you know, the rules and legalities. And I'm like, and if I'm like, oh, I didn't know I was supposed to do that. They're like, okay, here are the rules. Just, we now learn, don't do it again. So So I think it's, you have to be informed. It's like with any group, you have to be informed. And are they, you know, is the group working in your best interest? And for my part, if people are going to get paid so that they can have a living wage and take care of themselves and take care of whomever they're responsible for, that's a good thing. And I think with, I know with SAG-AFTRA, you've got actors who are making money, who are, you know, big A-list actors. They're donating back into funds to make sure that people can keep, you know, they're able to be on strike and still be supported.
Yeah, some of these folks are paying their entire production team's bills. Yeah. While they're on strike. So, I mean, it really all depends on who you are and who you're talking to, you know, and the quality of the union is basically what it comes down to. Yeah. But I'm not going to pick them all with the same brush.
No, not all unions are created equal. I know there's some that are great. There's some that are not, and not, you know, human nature is not altruistic, unfortunately. And some people are always going to shovel money into their own pockets.
I know that UAW went on strike yesterday, today, something like that.
Yesterday, the big three. And they were strategically striking at...
In like three like states one, or something like that.
It was three different states at three different plants.
And so they say it could expand.
Yeah. So yeah, it's...
lots of things going on in the union world.
Well, lots of things going on with record profits not sharing it, but that's beside the point.
Well, you, I've had issues like JR had. I've never been a member of a union, first off, so I need to say that. But you know, I've had opinions about unions that have not always been positive. But when the when the workers at these auto plants gave back to the company, gave up salary, gave up things that they had already earned. Mm-hmm. And then they can't get them back. That's shitty behavior.
Same deal. Fuck you.
They gave up their cost of living increase. I mean, that and not getting that back, not getting that, not having, you know.
While giving themselves raises. That's fucking bullshit. 397 and, times the average worker's price or say average worker's salary.
Yeah.
397 times.
I'm not going to fault someone for if you're running a business to be profitable with your business. But at the same time, you need to treat the people who are making that money, who are making whatever processes and things that you are selling, you need to treat them fairly and let their success grow with yours.
That was the same fucking thing in the oil business, only we got laid off every 2 years.
Oh, it was the same thing in higher education.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Anyway, I mean,
it was... Oh, I'm sorry, soapbox?
Regardless of all that, there are some interesting things going on. There are some things that will affect or could affect publishing.
Yeah.
Acting, you know, theater, movies, TV, the bottom, whole deal.
Yeah. But the bottom line with that is if at some point, because a lot of these places will start putting out calls, oh, we need writers for this. Oh, where this job is opening here and we need people to act. If it looks like you're crossing a line,
you probably are.
You probably are. And be aware that if you choose to do that, you will likely not be able to join said union later in your career. You will be on a persona non grata list.
Non grata.
Persona non grata.
Thank you.
Gratis is for free. So persona for free.
Person free person persona free
persona non free non gratis.
You the got paid persona. The paid persona. I see.
I like that. I got to use that.
$20 a month. That's what we'll call that tier. That's it.
Oh my god, that's horrible. All right, do you folks have any other questions for us, knuckleheads? Persona 3, persona cubed.
We like stay on topic and discuss real shit today.
Well, we did kind of stay on topic. Sort of. we're still talking about bad influences. What about current events? Are those bad influences, Terry?
Yes. It made me waste a writing day.
Bastards.
Watching just, a bunch of Terry corrupt I, politicians be corrupt.
Terry and I both have some names to add to our kill lists.
Oh, boy.
Do you foresee an indie small press union forming?
There's so many publishers. Like. I don't even know that that's possible. I mean,
not a union. I know there are organizations for writers.
Yeah.
And there could, I don't know. That actually might not, if it doesn't exist, that could be an interesting thing to look at, having an association for, you know, small press that is not necessarily genre specific.
You know what the most terrifying union in the world would be?
Cats.
Software development union. Imagine them going on strike. Software developers, IT administrators, etc., all going on strike just for one day would bring the economy to its complete fucking knees. I love that idea.
I think there's a story there.
Oh, yeah, there is.
Oh, there's a story.
I was part of a writer cooperative, Antoine, and I think your mileage may vary with that. I think there are certain independent publishers of science fiction who are essentially boutique cooperatives, and they would be an excellent example of how all that could work. The one I was with did not work that way. It did not work out well, but that was very, very early in my career, and nobody knew what the fuck they were doing. So it your mileage may vary. I do like the idea of a co-op, though. I do like the idea of a co-op, but I just have not had good experience with that. yeah, just that's one it, day being unavailable is enough to create havoc. Yes.
That's it. That's how whatever union needs to bring down, you know, the upper tiers. They just need to get the software devs on their side.
My email doesn't work. Who's gonna fix it? Oh my god. You all these gerontocracy fucking executives up there, not unable to gerontological. Octogenarians who are running the CEOs up there can't even figure out their email. I'll get locked out. It'd be a lot of fun.
Now I'm thinking like of all the possibilities. You've got, you know, somebody wants to stage a coup. Or, you know, take over some, you know, convoy. What did they get? Did they get the nukes? Did they get the plans?
No, they got the software people. They got the hardware people.
They got the nerds.
Obviously, we need to go ahead and just have, like, some kind of uprising in a third world country that we can all move to. And it could be, like, the country of independent authors.
Uruguay, I'm telling you, they'd love it.
Nothing would ever get done, mind you, but we could have it.
That's not true. A lot of drinking would get done.
I'm sure, you know what? I'm sure there's an island somewhere in the Bahamas that you could lease.
Stephen King, get on that shit.
But then you have to deal with hurricanes.
No, yeah. This is true. Well, if you have a question if you have a question or comment about anything we talked about in this show, please tell us what we said. You can send an email to show@deadrobotsociety.com. You can find me on Mastodon at @Paul_E_Cooley @VYRSE.social. You can find us at YouTube at youtube.com/DRS podcast to see way too many cats. You can find us on Facebook, the listeners of the Dead Robots Society Facebook group, where Terry mangles all the madness. And if you want to support the show, you can find us at patreon.com/DRS podcast and buymeacoffee.com/DRS podcast, where for as little as $1 a month, you get access to exclusive live shows, which we are going to do in about 10 minutes. And at the $10 level, you get your name read. And our $10 patrons are Tony L. Joy, Lisa Slack, Isabel Cushy, and Tim Niederreiter. Thank you to all of our patrons for making this show possible. And with that, I don't think we have anything else to say. I don't know.
We do not. At least I don't know.
Around the island of misfit toys. Yeah, I believe that. Well, folks, thanks for hanging out with us. Have a great weekend, and we will see you next week. Same bat time, same bat channel, 3 p.m. CST. Join us for chat. All right. Have a good one.
Bye-bye.